Okay, very good. So I will say first of all, say a few words about meditation, and then we can do some guided meditation for about half an hour, okay? Now, meditation, what is it? What is meditation? Well, one way of thinking about meditation is that meditation is a kind of exercise you do for your mind. So if you want your body to be fit and healthy, then you go for a jog or a swim or something like that. And if you do that regularly, then you keep things in working order and you tend to be more healthy, unless you drop dead of a heart attack or something, but you know what I mean. So with meditation also we have the idea that with your mind that you should exercise it, right? Now I'm sure that you've heard of this kind of idea, right? So that, you know, especially as we get older, we have to keep using our minds to keep them sharp, and you know, we do puzzles or we engage our mind or we read books or we have conversations and so on, and that keeps our mind sharp, right? So it's one aspect of doing that, but then there's a whole other aspect of dealing with your mind which we tend to forget. And if you think about exercising your body, right? You go for a jog, or you go for a swim, or you play some sports, or something like that. And what do you do then? Well, what you do then is you rest, right? And if you don't rest, what happens to your body? Yeah? If you do nothing but jogging, and you never stop, then it's not going to be good for your body. Huh? It's going to be extreme. Your body will be stressed out and will suffer all kinds of things. So you need to have this cycle where you do some exercise, some activity, and then some rest. That's how nature works. You think about the cycles of the day. Huh? You have the daytime, the sun comes up, the air is full of energy, you go around, do everything you need to do, and then the nighttime comes. Yeah? All the plants sort of go, withdraw, animals go to sleep, and you need that time of rest. Yeah? Same thing with the year. You know, you have summer, everything's active and growing, winter time, things become quiet. So everything in life, you can see it has these cycles of activity and cycles of rest. And one of the problems is that we don't recognize this, and we don't pay attention to learning how to rest your mind. So when we go to school, we learn how to use our mind, right? We learn how to analyze and research and do math and write and do all these kinds of things where you know how to work your mind, but you're never taught how to rest your mind. Yeah? And this is very, very important. It's just as important as being able to do things with your mind is the ability to not do things with your mind. And having being able to rest deeply and meaningfully, yeah, is going to multiply and amplify whatever it is that you want to do with your mind. So if you want to be creative, if you want to be able to think straight, if you want to have emotions that are peaceful and happy rather than, you know, being torn and conflicted all the time, if you want to have a sense of purpose, if you want to be able to improve your memory or any of these kinds of things, then learning how to rest your mind well, efficiently, effectively, and deeply, this will improve everything else that you do with your mind. Okay? And so that ability to rest your mind deeply, efficiently, and effectively is what we call meditation. So we have a word in meditation that we call samadhi, and this is a word that you'll encounter if you hang around Buddhist meditation circles long enough. And one of the reasons we use the Indian word samadhi for this is because there isn't really a Western or an English word that means the same thing. And what samadhi means is something like this. It means something like that all of the parts, all the different aspects of your mind are all there, they're all present, they're all working together. It all clicks, right? Where everything comes together and is just still and perfect. We don't really have this idea in Western psychology or Western philosophy or anything. But according to the Indian philosophies, including Buddhism, that it's possible to develop this state of samadhi, this state of perfect peace and stillness. And that state of samadhi is the deepest rest that we can give our mind, much deeper than sleeping or whatever else we might do to rest our mind. So, how do we develop this? Well, it's important to right from the beginning to recognize that learning to rest our mind is doing something which is quite different from what we normally do with our mind. So we can't take the ordinary assumptions and presumptions that we have and then just put them into meditation and expect them to work. Okay? In particular, what I'm talking about is we can't expect to be able to control things. Okay? So you think about how you do things in the world, think about how you want to achieve something, right? How do you achieve something? You put certain inputs into it, you control what happens to it, and you determine what the outcome is like, right? That's how we get things done in the world, whether you're fixing a fence or doing your accounting or applying for a job or whatever. That's what you do. Making a recipe, right? You get all the different parts, you put it together, you have a certain process, you do all those things, and you get an expected outcome, at least in theory, right? Right? That's how we do things. We want to control things. And if the outcome doesn't work, we think, oh, we didn't control things properly, right? The input side was wrong. With meditation, it's not like that, right? Meditation comes from letting go, alright? Now that's not going to work when you're cooking, okay? You put all the ingredients there on the shelf and think, I'm just going to let go, do what you want, ingredients. That, no, it doesn't work like that, yeah? It doesn't work if you go to the office in the morning and the boss says, you know, you need to do this, 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 and you say, okay, yeah, I'm just letting go, I'll see what happens, yeah. Huh? So, but in meditation, that's what works. Okay, so we have to sort of get away from this idea of thinking that we need to control everything. Okay, so rather than controlling things in meditation, what we do is we give it nudges and suggestions. Right? So we sort of gradually ease our way in a certain direction, but we use the lightest touch that we possibly can. Okay. The least we can do, and just do a little bit, and just learn to trust. Ultimately, our minds have a strong tendency to seek peace. They have a strong tendency to seek harmony. They have a strong tendency to seek what is pleasurable and what is happy. So if we get out of the way and if we have the faith and the trust in our own minds, that it will come to that place of stillness, then this is the most powerful and effective way to meditate. So we think of our mind as being something like water, which is disturbed up and turbid and flurried and all of these kinds of things. The fastest way to settle down that water and to get the clear water is to just leave it be, to not interfere with it. And it will settle down all by itself. This is what your mind is like. As long as you don't interfere, your mind will settle down all by itself. Okay. So, if this is the case, and if it's really true that you just let go and you don't do anything, then what do you actually do when you meditate? Okay. So what you do when you meditate is what we use as a meditation method, right? Or a meditation subject. The purpose of the meditation subject really is to give your thinking mind something to occupy itself with, which isn't going to be too harmful, okay? It's basically that we're keeping you busy and out of the way so you don't mess things up too much, right? This is the purpose of a meditation object. This is why you can have many different methods, many people will teach different ways of meditation, and basically they will all work, because all they're trying to do is to bring the mind to stage this letting go. You see, if we were able to just sit down and let go of everything, we wouldn't need to have meditation methods, right? We'd just sit down, we'd just do it, there you are, just still. And when you're really advanced at meditation, that's what you can do, you don't need a meditation method. But when we're beginning, we need crutches, yeah? And that crutches is the meditation method. And so what that means is we sit down, we have an idea in our mind what kind of meditation that we're going to do. So for this evening, that kind of meditation is what we call meditation on loving kindness. Right? Now there are many different methods, okay? And different methods are suitable for different people with different personalities and so on. So, there's no really way to know in advance what is the best meditation method for you. The only thing to do is just try it out and see. So if you're learning or you want to explore different methods, then just try it out, see how it goes. Give it a good shot. Try it for at least a few weeks, practicing it regularly for a few weeks, and then see what is the effect of that meditation. How does it work? How does it feel? How does your mind feel afterwards? And after you've practiced it for that period of time, then you should have a sense for whether you feel like you're connecting with that method, or whether perhaps it might be a good idea to try something else that you might feel more suitable. Okay. So, the loving kindness meditation, I'll talk about that very, very briefly in the next 5 minutes, and I'll talk about it in more detail after the meditation. Okay, so one of the things about meditation, of course, is that meditation is a practice, okay? And so it's all about what is your experience, right? So it's as if, if you read a book on the principles of bicycle riding, and then you think, oh, I know how to do this, and then you get on a bicycle, what are you going to do? You're going to fall off, right? So instead you just get on the bike and you try. So this is what we do in meditation. So you don't need to know a huge amount of meditation theory, and you don't need to read too many books and things like that. But just some basic principles is enough to get started. And then later on, if you want, you can learn more. So, loving kindness. Loving kindness is an emotion, first thing to recognize. And what we're doing with this meditation is that we're taking this emotion of loving kindness, which is an emotion that you already have. Alright? You already have loving kindness in you. Maybe it's not, present all the time, but it's always there, ready to come up, coming and going. It's part of your life, part of who you are, part of what you feel every day. Okay? Unless you are a psychopath. In which case you probably don't feel it. If you are a psychopath, then please come and see me at the end of the class and I'll give you a special meditation, alright? But for most of us, most of the time, we feel loving kindness, but it comes and goes, doesn't it? We don't know when it's going to be there. Sometimes we feel like we should feel it and we don't. Sometimes you're with somebody who you love and yet you're angry with them, right? And sometimes, so it's erratic, it changes, it comes and goes. So what we do with meditation is we learn to develop it in a more consistent way so that you feel that loving kindness when you come to sit down to meditate. You can call it up and develop it and deepen it intentionally. Right? So when we do this meditation, we begin by being present in the present moment, letting go of the past and the future. And then we bring up the words of loving kindness. We say to ourselves, may I be happy. It's just a simple thought. And we use this simple thought to help to steady the mind and calm the mind. Using a simple phrase like that in meditation helps you to be able to let go of the thousand and one other things that you might be thinking about. Right? So instead of having a thousand thoughts in your mind, you just have one thought. Yeah? One peaceful and wholesome thought. Very, very simple. And so we develop that. We start by doing loving kindness for yourself. Right? In this particular method. For this meditation we'll do this evening, because it's just a short meditation, we'll do loving kindness for yourself and loving kindness for a loved person. Two people only. Actually, there's a lot more to this meditation, but we're just getting started, so we'll just do these two. Yourself and somebody who you love. So I want you all to think now, somebody who that you love and somebody who's going to be easy for you to develop loving kindness for. Right? So the person, doesn't have to be everybody that you love, okay? Don't feel guilty because I chose, one of my children, not the other one, or one of my cats and not the other one. Right, therefore I'm with no. You can choose a different person next time you meditate, okay? But if you try to put everyone in your meditation, your loving kindness meditation, it's going to take a long time, yeah? And you're going to be Auntie Joan and Uncle Fred and Uncle George and Auntie Sally, or maybe Auntie Sally, no, maybe not Auntie Sally, I'm not quite sure whether she goes in there or not. Anyway, and then it's going to get very, very complicated, and you don't know, and so just one person, okay? And the trick to it is that it doesn't matter how deeply that you love that person, okay? It's not the person you love the most, it's the person you love the simplest, okay? Meditation is all about simplicity. Often, people we love the most are people who we have complicated and messed up love-hate relationships with, okay? Right? That's what comes. That's what a mature relationship is. It's complicated, yeah? So we don't want complicated. This is meditation. We want simple. It's not the time to be sorting out all of your issues, right? It's the time to be getting in contact with those very childlike and simple feelings, okay? You can sort out your issues another time, okay? So sometimes it's good to choose for that loved person, you know, somebody like maybe a grandchild or an uncle or somebody who's not maybe that close to you, but who you know you have a fondness for and a liking for and a love for, rather than someone that you're very close to. It might be someone you're very close to, but don't think that it has to be someone that you're very close to. It might be just someone a little bit more distant. Sometimes we have simpler relationship with them. So the purpose of this meditation is to find a sense of peace, a sense of joy within yourself that's based on this wholesome emotion of loving kindness. When we begin the meditation, we begin it with words, right? But the words are just a starting place. The point of the meditation is not words, the point of the meditation is the feeling of loving kindness. So when we do, and one of the things that we work with in this meditation is that we can do words, right? So you can sit down there and you can say, may I be happy, and so on. And anybody can do that. But you can't necessarily do feelings, right? That's something that happens or it doesn't happen. It's much harder to predict and harder to control and all of those things. So when we do the meditation, we see, we experiment, we try out, okay? But don't think of this feeling as being something which is strange and esoteric and, you know, hard to attain, right? Think of it as something, think of it like a wavelength, which is already there, right? It's part of who you are and it's already present, but you just have to, it's just a matter of tuning into it, right? And when you learn to tune into it, after you've done this meditation a few times, you get the practice, you get the experience, you can sit down, you can tune into that wavelength, and you find, to your surprise, that it's there all the time. Yeah? So that's a very beautiful thing. Okay, so let's do some meditation for the next half an hour. So sitting quietly. Allowing the mind to settle back inside the body. settled in the present and say to oneself the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Just repeating those words again and again and again, evenly, steadily, clearly. Foundation for your mind. Mind starts to think about this and that. Don't worry about it. Don't try to push the thoughts away or make them stop. Instead of trying to get rid of the thoughts, why not just give them a hug? Make them feel loved. Make them feel accepted. The thoughts, after all, are just a part of you. Just give them a bit of love and then come back. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. As you continue with those words of metta, notice also that there's something else, something that's not words, and that's the feeling of metta. Gentle feeling, feeling of warmth and love. rises up in your heart, it fills your whole body, like water soaking through a cloth, until you can feel your whole body soaked through with the beautiful, gentle happiness of loving kindness. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. second stage, bringing in the name of that loved person. There's no need to think about that person, no need to imagine them or to send your mind over there to where they are. Just bring their name into the words of metta. Keep your mind settled and centered inside your body. Keep the feeling of loving kindness flowing for that loved one just as it was for yourself. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May they be happy. May they be happy. beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Radiating out, covering the whole world with a beautiful feeling of loving kindness. Infinite, limitless. Meditation. From all beings, come back to that loved one. May that loved one be happy. And then back to yourself. May I be happy. And then letting the words of loving kindness go. Letting the feeling of loving kindness fade away. And allowing the mind to come back to a neutral, empty, open space. finish the meditation, take a minute to reflect back over the practice we've done together. Think about how your mind was when we began the meditation. What were you thinking about? How did you feel? And then look at how things progressed and changed during the meditation. See, we did the different parts of the meditation at each stage. How was that? How did your mind respond? What was helpful? What was confusing or obstructive? And finally, think about how your mind is now. Look at any calm or peace that you might have attained now and compare that with what we had before. If you make it a habit to reflect like this at the end of each meditation, then it helps you to learn to understand the process of meditation. When you understand it, you can have a good meditation every time. And finally, we can dedicate the goodness that we've done together. May all beings be happy, may all beings be well, may all beings realize Nibbana. A stretch, or maybe you need to have a bit of a wiggle. Funny, our bodies aren't really designed to be still. For the next little while, I'll give a bit of a talk on meditation, especially loving kindness meditation, and go over again some of the, in a bit more detail, some of the things that we talked about before. Now, when we think about meditation, how to go about it, remember how we just recited the Buddha's sutta on loving kindness, the discourse on loving kindness. It was the chant that we did earlier. And one of the things that you notice in doing that, basically that discourse is divided into three parts. If you sort of have a look at it and analyze it, it's divided more or less into three parts. My first part is talking about how to live, right? Second part is talking about how to meditate. And the third part is talking about what's the results of that meditation, where does it lead you? I think that's telling us something quite important about what meditation is about, right? So that see, these days often we think of meditation as basically a kind of spiritual Prozac. Right? I'm going to go out and do anything that I want, and live exactly how I want, do all of these kinds of things, and then I'll come back home and I'll do this thing that will make me feel good. and I'll take a pill. And you can have like brain scans and things like that will tell you that meditation works, right? I don't know if you've seen this, these kinds of things, you know, these brain scans and stuff, and they're very impressive. Science says that meditation works. The fact that millions of meditators have meditated and found that it works is meaningless because science says that it works, you know? It's a bit beside the point, but I was very lucky couple of weeks ago. I had a chance to have a chat with a professor of medicine who specializes in neuroscience, and I asked her about all of these kinds of studies, and she just kind of laughed at it, the idea that you can measure compassion or something like that through an MRI scan is completely ludicrous. But anyway, this is what all these people say you can do, so good on them. So how do you live your life? This is the important thing. one of the, you see, there's, we often have to go have this attitude that we're stressed and we're going to use meditation to solve all of our problems. It's like life is the problem and meditation is the solution. Yeah. Whereas if you look at how the Buddha talked about it, it's exactly the opposite. Life, i.e. in the Metta Suttas, the first third of the Sutta, right, that's talking about life. It's talking about how you live, what do you do these, how do you talk to people, how do you get your work done, all of those things. That is the first part of your meditation. That's what the basis of your meditation is, right? That's not the obstacle to meditation. That's the foundation of your meditation, right? Very important to understand this. In Buddhism, we always refer to this as what we call a threefold training or threefold practice. We call sila, samadhi, panya. Ethics, or the way you live your life. Samadhi is the meditation side, and then panya is the wisdom side. Okay. So, how you live your life is what sila is. Right? And that shouldn't be, that's not an obstacle to your practice. Right? That's not something that's getting in the way of your spiritual development, right? That is something which is the very foundation of your spiritual development. And if you find that your life, right, if you feel in your mind, right, that your life is what's creating you stress, right, if your life is making you confused, if your life is making you depressed and anxious and all of these things, then you need to look at that. Don't think of meditation as the pill that's going to solve all of those problems. Sure, meditation can help, right? But you need to look at what you're actually doing to create those conditions. And basically there are two kinds of things that create those conditions. Sometimes it's external and you need to change what's happening externally in your life. That's the reality of it. Sometimes you need to quit your job or change how you live, or give up taking drugs, or whatever it might be. So sometimes you need to actually change things about how you live your life that are causing you suffering. And then sometimes it's not about changing what you do, but it's changing how you think, right? So it's changing your attitude. Now, luckily in Buddhism, changing your attitude is always possible, right? Changing the external conditions, sometimes possible, sometimes not possible, right? So then you're constrained in that, right? But it's always possible to change your attitude. So this is something which is very good and very important to develop as part of how you want, if you want to be a good meditator, right? Don't worry too much about thinking, oh, do I have the right method? Do I have the right teacher? Do I have to chase around the world finding the right thing? Do I have this kind of guru? Can I get the perfect meditation app, right? Can I do this and that? That's all details, right? Yes, those things can be nice, but that's only little things, small things, right? The big thing is how do you live your life, yeah? And especially, the most important thing is how do you find meaning in your life, okay? This is the thing. How do you find meaning in what you do? Yeah? Because each day, each one of us is making choices. And whether those choices are meaningful or not is up to us. And we can live in a life where we feel like our life is pointless. Where you can do things all day and you feel like it doesn't make any difference. Where you feel that, why bother? Right? Or you can live in a life where each small thing that you do, right, is something which is a blessing. Is something which is beautiful. Something which is helpful to others. When I was staying with a friend of mine in Sydney a number of years ago, he showed me a video called About Schmidt. I don't know if anybody saw that. The monks aren't supposed to watch movies, so don't tell them some Brahma, okay? Do you see About Schmidt? Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So you should see it if you haven't seen it. It's a wonderful movie. But it's about this guy called Schmidt. Believe it or not. I think it was Jack Nicholson, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he was this, like a clerk or something in a company, and he was retiring, and he spent his whole day looking after these whole career looking after this set of files, right? So these filing cabinets, and he was the one who filed everything and looked after everything and so on. And then he resigned, and everyone was like, "Oh, you know, it's been so, we value you so much, and it's been so great having you here." And then he went home, and they immediately took all these cabinets and just threw them in the trash. Right? That was his life's work. And then the whole thing, he went on this journey across country to his daughter's wedding, and the whole thing was this series of excruciatingly awkward and embarrassing and meaningless and depressing events. And you were like one thing after the other, and you can't imagine that it would get any worse. Right? And his life is just completely hopeless, and nothing has gone right, and nothing has worked. Yeah? But the only thing that he does at the end, and it's such a beautiful thing at the end of the movie, he's given a tiny little bit of his income, he's given as a donation for a young boy in Africa. And then at the end of the thing, he gets a letter back from the boy saying how grateful he was, how he's been able to go to school and have a life, and how this has been made possible. And that tiny act of dana and helping him, which he never really thought much about, you know, it's just kind of dismissed it. It's just a small thing. And at the right at the end, you know, that was what that had, the power of redemption. And it actually meant that his life meant something to somebody else. Right? That's such a beautiful thing to think about. And when you look at your life in that way, you realize that actually there are thousands of things that you do, many things that you do every day. They don't have to be big, grand things. You don't have to be like Mother Teresa or the Dalai Lama or something like that, okay? You can be if you want, that's great, right? But the small things that you do every day, yeah? Saying good morning to somebody, yeah? Giving someone a smile, offering somebody a cup of tea, opening the door for somebody, yeah? All of these little acts that help people to live together and to be happy, yeah? And not to speak of those little acts, I'm sure you can also think of bigger things that you do, where you go out of your way to help somebody, to do something for somebody. And so we should reflect on those kinds of things. Each time you reflect on those things, you begin to see that there is meaning in everything that you do. Yeah? A lot of the time, I think these days, one of our big problems is that we work, like Schmidt, we work in some place where we don't see any connection between what we do and actual people, right? I mean, you think about in traditional societies, you know, you grew rice, right? And this is what most people, most of the time in human history, have done, right? Is that they've been farmers. And you go out there onto the fields and you sow the rice and you look after it and you reap it and you bring it home and you thresh it and you look after it and you cook it and you bring it in and you offer it to your family. And your family eats that rice which you have grown. I remember when I was in Thailand, we lived in a monastery where we were still surrounded by all the rice paddies and so on. And each year, after the harvest time, they would get the first rice of the new season. And they'd all come into the monastery and they'd cook that and they'd offer that to the monks. And it was such a beautiful thing. And you could see all of the people in the village had worked together. You know, they worked so hard to grow this rice and look after it. And then finally they can present it and they can share it with the whole community. It's such a beautiful thing, and you see that relationship between the work you've done and something which is actually meaningful. Yeah? And of course, these days we're so disconnected, aren't we? Right? Maybe you work in the agriculture department instead. Right? So you're not growing rice. You don't see the rice. You don't see the seed. You don't see it grow. You don't see it mature. You don't see it being cooked and served and eaten. Right? All you see is a computer screen with some numbers on it, and you fill in some numbers and some forms and things like that. And it has no connection with the reality, the living reality of what you're doing. Right? So because that connection and that sense of meaning is not provided to us, we have to make that connection. Right? So we have to, and this is, again, this is what you see in traditional societies. What they do is they always make some kind of ritual or something around these things. So you have a ceremony for the rains or for the harvest and so on. And that's a way of reminding themselves as a community of the meaning of what they're doing. And we've lost so much of that, right? So it's not given to us by our culture anymore. So we have to invent it, right? We have to make it meaningful. We have to make the effort to make it meaningful. So when you, all the things that you're doing during the day, make them meaningful, right? And never fall prey to the three worst words in the English language. Do you know what the three worst words in the English language are? And they're not four-letter words, so you can rest easy. Three worst words are, it was nothing. Right? never say that. Yeah? And if you do something for somebody, oh, thank you so much, they say yes, you say, it was nothing. Right? Yeah? That's a lie. You're breaking your precepts when you say that. It's not nothing. It is something. Yeah? It is something. And it's not only something, it's something very beautiful. Yeah? When you do something to help somebody, it's something very beautiful. So when they say thank you, you don't say it was nothing. You say, yes, that was very kind of me, wasn't it? It must be because I'm a very kind person. Yeah? Actually, you know, I went a lot, it was very difficult and it took a lot of time and effort, and I did it because I was thinking kind thoughts and I wanted to do something kind. Yeah? Not it was nothing. Yeah? It was something. So when we have that sense of happiness and this kind of wholesome sense of meaning and purpose to what we're doing, then when we, by the time we come to sit to meditate, we're already feeling good. This is the idea, yeah? So don't, instead of struggling to meditate and to sort all these things out, do it the easy way, okay? Make yourself feel good before you've even come to meditate, huh? And then the time comes to meditate, and then you think, hey, I feel good already, there's no problem, why bother meditating, right? But still, then when you sit to meditate, all of those things you've done, you can bring them to mind. Remind yourself all of the kindness that you did, all of the good things that you did, all of those wonderful things you did. When the bad stuff comes up, just put it to one side, say, yeah, that's all right, I'm not going to do that. Focus on the good stuff, right? This is what we always do. We always focus on the bad stuff. So we focus on the good stuff, bring it to mind, remember it, and then begin your meditation. Right? Now, again, come back to this thing I mentioned before when I was talking about the meditation, that loving kindness or metta is something which is natural. It's a part of who you are. Okay? You might not know it. You might not realize it. You might not recognize it. But it is there. It's part of who you are. So always, Buddhist meditation, real Buddhist meditation, is always based on a reality. It's not based on a fantasy. Okay? So we're not asking you to imagine something. We're asking you to get in contact with that reality of loving kindness. So, when we sit down, just briefly recap the method that we looked at before. We sit down. The first part of the meditation, we just be mindful. Okay? Any kind of meditation, it's always good to just start with that. Rather than rushing into the meditation, okay, you spend a few minutes to just sit there and be mindful. Let your body calm down, settle into your posture, let your breath calm down, and let your mind get at least a little bit calm, a little bit peaceful. Okay? So just give yourself a few minutes to do that. Remind yourself to be present. And it's a good idea to check out your body while you're doing that, just to scan your mind through different parts of the body and see what the feelings are inside your body. Awareness of your body is very important in meditation. Right? All Buddhist meditation begins with kayagatasati, is mindfulness, establishing the body. Okay? So if you keep the mindfulness, inward focus, notice the feelings and so on in the body. Then when you feel ready, without rushing, when you feel ready, then you can begin the words of loving kindness. Now we use the words, start with, may I be happy, okay? And some people don't like these words. They say, I don't like the word may. Can I say, let me be happy? And then somebody else says, I don't like the word happy. And somebody else says, I don't like the word I. I said, is be okay? Now don't worry too much about the words. Not only words. You want to use different words? Fine, use different words. People say to me all the time, can I do this? Can I do that? I think you can do whatever you want. I'm not here to tell you what you can and can't do. Okay? What I'm here to do is share with you some tips that have been found useful by meditators in the past. Okay? So take those tips, use them how you like. Right? You want to try doing it a different way? That's fine. Right? But just remember that the way we talk about meditation is not kind of, we're not just kind of making stuff up, right? We're talking out of an experience of many, many, many years of practitioners who've learned that there are certain ways of doing things that are useful and certain ways that are not. Okay, so it's, you know, it's a good thing to just to try it out and to see how it goes at the first, and then if you want to, when you understand it, you want to play around and experiment with it. That's fine. So, may I be begin with ourselves. Some people don't like being happy. Right? True, isn't it? We're very mixed up people, yeah? I had a friend in Sydney used to work with mentally disturbed kids who were teenagers, and one of them was like really ADD and really stressed out, and really, you know, never, he hadn't slept for years without taking pills, right? And then so my friend sort of gets him down and says, okay, let's do this lying down meditation, relaxation, I think he called him, and sort of got him to lie down and then sort of attention to the breath and then just talked him through this relaxation. And then he fell asleep, and he laid there for an hour or so, and then woke up. And he said, "How did you feel?" He said, "It was the best sleep I've had for years. And it's the first time he'd been able to sleep without having drugs for years." Yeah. And the next day, he said to him, "You know, do you want to do that relaxation again?" He said, "No, I don't think so." Because we're attached, right? We're attached to we identify with it, right? I'm the kid with ADD. Right? If you're not the kid who's stressed and anxious, who are you? Right? So this is something that also needs to be answered. Right? So because peace of mind is very easy. It's just there. Yeah? You don't have to do anything special. But we get attached to who we are. At least it's something, right? At least if you're feeling pain, at least you're feeling something, right? It's the same thing with like these girls who like cut themselves and things like that, you know? At least you feel something, right? So you know who you are. So when you come to meditation, sometimes when you want yourself to be happy, then all of these things come up, all these doubts come up, all of this, you know, questioning, don't worry about all those things. Leave them to one side. Right? Now, if you find that that's very difficult, if you find that they're kind of persistent and, you know, worrying kind of thoughts and things that come up at that stage, then maybe it's when you need to go and talk to somebody about it and sort of try to understand what's happening, okay? But in the meditation itself, don't try to kind of psychoanalyze yourself or double guess yourself or anything like that. Just try to be peaceful. Let go of those doubts. Don't worry about them, yeah? Just come back to that thought. Sometimes it's easier to do the loving kindness for a loved person. So if you find it easier to do it for a loved person, fine, do it for the loved person. Like I said before, you choose for your loved person somebody who you have a simple and uncomplicated love for, okay? Not someone who you're going to have lots of mixed feelings about. So someone you have a simple and uncomplicated love for, see if you can get that feeling going, a feeling of loving kindness. And when that feeling's strong, keep it going and spread it through your whole body. Indulge in it. Enjoy it, right? Luxuriate in it. Have a bath in it. Okay? That feeling is so, there's nothing wrong with it. Okay? It's okay to be happy. Yeah? There's nothing virtuous about suffering. Yeah? Happiness is good. Yeah? Happiness leads you to enlightenment. Right? So allow yourself to be happy. Yeah? Allow yourself to feel that. If you can feel that while doing loving kindness for the loved one, then later on you can come back and do it for yourself. And you keep on doing that until you can feel loving kindness for yourself and for your loved person exactly the same, right? Until it doesn't really matter which one is which. After all, you're just a person, right? You're no more worthy of love or unworthy of love than anybody else. Right? You think that you're unworthy of love because you know all of your dirty little secrets. But I'm sorry to disappoint you, but your dirty little secrets are no dirtier or uglier than anybody else's. You know? So don't worry about it all that much, okay? That's just what humanity is, yeah? We tend to have problems and issues and things like that. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not worthy of being loved, right? In fact, quite the opposite. It means that you're more in need of it, yeah? So, and just a final kind of tip for how to for doing this meditation is just to, when you're ending a meditation, always to, like we did in the guided meditation, always to withdraw stage by stage, the same way that you went into the meditation, come out of it, and come out of it gradually and gently. Alright, so don't kind of pull yourself out of meditation, give yourself a few minutes, gradually open your eyes, let yourself come out. and get adjust and come back to normal. So treat your mind gently and kindly, mind in meditation. And people often ask, you know, how much should I meditate? And so what I usually say, my personal recommendation is you should try to meditate 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week. Okay, so this is a kind of a minimum good practice, I think. If it's less than that, that's okay. But I think 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week. I hear that there's a diet that's based on that now, right? Don't they call it the 5-2 or something like that?
5-2.
5-2, is that right? Yeah. Basically, you go on diet for 5 days and then you eat what you want for the other two, something like
the
that.
The other way around, I think.
Is it? You diet for 2 days and then eat what you want for five?
Yeah. You diet for two and eat for five.
Wow,
well, I might be wrong.
Anyway, so but you get the idea. So the idea is that if you say I'm going to meditate every day and then you miss one day, then you'll feel guilty and so on. So instead, you say I'll meditate 5 days a week, and then if you miss one day, it's like, oh, that's all right, okay. And if you meditate more than that, it's good. You're doing extra. And so 20 minutes, I think, is a good time to meditate. Less than 20 minutes, you're not going to get that deep in the meditation. It's still worthwhile. Even 5 minutes is still worthwhile. But 20 minutes is good. Most people, and I don't want to generalize too much because people are very individual, but I think most people, if they try to meditate much longer than 20 or 30 minutes, it's often not all that valuable. Because basically your concentration isn't strong enough, yeah? And most of the time after 20 or 30 minutes people start to maybe drift off, start to fall asleep or something like that. And so you often find if you try to meditate for an hour that, you know, the first half an hour is reasonably clear, and then after that you're like, what happened? Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. not sure where that time went. So you're much better off to do a shorter meditation, and then if you want to do more, then do, you know, twice a day doing 20 minutes or something like that, rather than sort of trying to do long meditations, unless, of course, you feel at the end of the 20 minutes or 30 minutes your mind is clear and bright and strong and you want to keep on meditating and going deeper. Great. Okay. But all I'm saying is that don't kind of force it. There's no particular virtue in just sort of making yourself sit longer for the sake of it. Okay. So 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and I think that's a good practice. Okay. So that's that. Any questions?
I ask, when somebody is diagnosed with a very serious illness,
yeah,
the first thing I say is, well, I'll fight it.
Okay.
Now, fighting with something is putting you in conflict with. So isn't that putting your body in conflict with your mind? So how do you balance it out?
Yeah, it can be. Well, it kind of depends. I mean, you know, to fight with something, I mean, is it's just a metaphor, really. Yeah. So, if you have physical illness, there's two sides of it with meditation. Okay. First side is that meditation can sometimes help you to deal with the physical illness itself, right? In the sense that when you meditate, your body becomes more peaceful. Basically, what happens when you meditate is that all of the parts of all the different energies and parts of your body and mind work together better, right? They work more in harmony, and because they work more in harmony, then they can help you to overcome the illness. Okay, so sometimes your illness can get better, but not in every case, right? Because sometimes, well, if you've broken your leg, well, meditation isn't going to help your leg to heal. Sorry. Maybe it might help a little bit, but what meditation can definitely do is meditation can definitely make you more accept everything, right? Be suffer less because of it, be more content with it, right? In fact, you can be thinking, hey, I broke my leg, I get to have a meditation retreat now for a while. So that's the main thing that you get from meditation. And, you know, this attitude of like fighting illness and things like that, yeah, okay, it's just a metaphor, really, but I mean, what does it mean? You know, you're not going to sit there and go, I'm going to bash this illness into submission or something. But I think what it means when we say about fighting illness, it means that we're going to be proactive, that we're going to have energy, that we're going to be persistent, that we're not going to let it get us down, yeah? So we're going to, so that those kind of attitudes, I think, are good, you know? So we should definitely, respond positively to the illness and try to do what we can to help, and meditate. meditation, hopefully, can help to do that. Yeah.
I was just wondering, in our chat, you said, like,
yeah,
may all beings be enlightened, more or less. So, I was wondering, like, can dogs and you know, animals that you can see that can choose right between wrong, if you read their, if you know them and you read their eyes and then, for their emotions, like, can, do you think they can become enlightened? Like, you hate that all be, may all be.
Sure. Sure, yeah.
I was just wondering.
Well, I mean, the normal position in Buddhism would be that any being can and should get enlightened, but you can't necessarily do it immediately. So, in that kind of realm, because you're in the animal realm, then you can't understand the teachings. So, you can't really kind of do the meditation and so on. So, you can certainly, you know, develop in a positive direction, right? So, you know, dogs can learn to be more kind and so on and so forth, right? And you can see dogs and cats will respond to conditions, and they can feel those positive and negative emotions, so certainly can do that and can develop, but in terms of actually getting enlightened, not in this lifetime, but maybe next time. Yeah. Just incidentally on that, there was a very interesting research came out a week or two ago. They're doing now studies into, I don't know if anybody else saw it, but they're doing studies into birds now, like ravens, crows, and things like that. And what they're actually doing is they're replicating studies that have been done on chimpanzees that were supposed to show how intelligent chimpanzees were and how close they were to humans. You know, things like having a sense of self, distinguishing right from wrong, being able to plan, make decisions, and things like that. And they're now showing that all of those are basically can be done by birds as well. Yeah, it's really quite shocking, really. And animals are just amazing, you know. So all the way you go, you know, everything that you look at, you try to think, oh, you know, animals are different than humans because of X, Y, Z. Basically, yeah. I mean, really, it's just a matter of degree, you know, nothing fundamentally different.
I think insects can learn too.
You think so?
Yes. A friend of mine, she had a spider web on her car.
Yeah.
And so every night she just gently, because it was in her way, she took it off and hung it somewhere else. And the next night she did the same thing. And on the third night, the spider went into his web where she clearly thought, well, this is a waste of space, you know. And I thought this was quite amazing. So
yeah.
Even a creature has got some sort of consciousness of changes.
Yeah, they have very complex behaviours.
Yes.
Okay.